than 70 years ago, Peoria, Illinois was the center of the universe, or at least the United States, when it came to the U.S. government showcasing how some of the best cutting-edge care for premature babies was being delivered at OSF St. Francis Medical Center.
The sisters took all kinds of risks, and they developed this innovation of building a unit that not only cared for premature babies, but for other sick newborns, and they developed it for an entire region of Central Illinois.
That's Dr. Tim Miller, and I'm Shelley Dankoff, your host for Health Accelerated, brought to you by OSF Healthcare. We appreciate you tuning in and remind you to be sure to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcast. Cutting-edge, innovative techniques with a bottom line of what's doing best for patients. It's been a hallmark of the Sisters of the Third Order of St. Francis since their founding in 1877, and that's not to say it hasn't been without its challenges, though. On this episode of Health Accelerated, we're having a bit of a book club to discuss how far things have come from such humble beginnings. Joining me are Dr. William Albers, retired pediatric cardiologist who has written a book, Growing Pediatricians in a Cornfield, and Dr. Tim Miller, retired neonatologist, who founded what is now known as the Neonatal Critical Care Unit at OSF St. Francis Medical Center and Children's Hospital of Illinois. He chronicled that journey along with author Monica Vest Wheeler, who is also with us, through this book, Through the Window, A History of the OSF St. Francis Medical Center Neonatal ICU. To all of you, thank you for being with us today. I am looking so forward to this conversation. I will start with a level set for our, viewers. Dr. Albers, give me a little bit of a bio and what brought you to Peoria all those years ago.
Well, it's a long story. I'll make it short. I was born and raised in northeastern Ohio and grew up in Canton, which is the home of the Football Hall of Fame, but it wasn't there at that time. I attended college at Oberlin College in northern Ohio. And medical school at Western Reserve University. Western Reserve University at that time had just revised its medical curriculum into a very radical departure from traditional medical education. And that, I guess, started my interest in medical education. I took my residency at Babies and Children's Hospital of Cleveland. And after my residency in 1962, I joined the Air Force for 2 years. And I was stationed in California at Norton Air Force Base in San Bernardino. I practiced pediatrics there for 2 years as the only pediatrician for a large group of military families. Learned a lot. I think it really matured me as a physician. But most importantly, I met a person and a family who became my best friend, Dr. Ralph Bransky and his family. They had family here in Peoria, Ralph's sister and brother-in-law and parents. had moved to Peoria, and we discussed living the rest of our lives together and thought about coming to Peoria to practice. Just as I was ready to get out of the military, I finally decided that I didn't really want to do general pediatrics and I wanted to specialize more. So those plans to come to Peoria were temporarily sidelined. I went to Boston for a 2-year fellowship in pediatric cardiology, during which time Dr. Salovey, who was Ralph's brother-in-law, and Bransky, who had come back to Peoria, decided that it was time to perhaps think about a cardiac surgery program in Peoria. And one thing led to another, and St. Francis offered me a position to come and open a cardiac catheterization laboratory, which was not present in Peoria at that time. And so I agreed. So I came in 1967. I came for several reasons. One was I learned as a resident and a fellow that I liked to teach, but I also wasn't very effective as an academic physician. I didn't like to write papers and do research. And so I was looking for a place where I could teach and wouldn't have to do research. I was looking to start something that didn't exist. I was interested in building a pediatric medical center. At that time, there were 10 pediatricians in Peoria in 1967. There was a pediatric residency program at St. Francis, as there were several other residencies as well. And I thought this would be an opportunity for me to teach and to try to build something new. Shortly after I came, I started working with the two residents we had in pediatrics at that time. they seemed to enjoy what I was doing. So I was asked by one of the general pediatricians, Dr. Calloway, who was then the elected chairman of pediatrics. In those days, all the physicians were separate from the hospital. Nobody was employed by the hospital. Dr. Calloway was the chairman of pediatrics, having been elected to do that, and he was also a director of the residency program. But when he saw my reaction with my relationship with the residents and that I had available time, he asked if I would take over the residency program and become elected chairman of the Department of Pediatrics. I'd been here just a year when that happened. And so I agreed, and from that point on, I represented the medical pediatric department on the various committees of the medical staff, and that lasted for about 30 years.
About 30 years, and then there were other iterations, too, and then you went into the whole pediatric cardiology, and we'll talk a little bit more about that because there's so many intersects with what I'm going to ask Dr. Miller about. So give me your bio for a level set for everybody, too, and how you ended up in Peoria, Illinois.
Well, I grew up in a very small community over by Champaign, and I had gotten interested in medicine while I was in high school because we had a family doctor who used to come to our house and give us the shots when we had the flu, and I really enjoyed interacting with this family doctor. So I went through pre-medicine at the University of Illinois, and then got accepted into medical school again at the University of Illinois, which at that time was only in Chicago. We did not have the campuses here in Peoria that we do now. But I had no idea what area of medicine I was going to like when I got done, but I got drafted and went to Vietnam after a rotating internship in South Bend, Indiana. And I had just found my wife, who was a premature baby nurse at the time and had just graduated. So I started getting interested in that. But while I was in Vietnam, very coincidentally, I was assigned for 6 months to a classmate that had been in my same class in medical school. And he had done a year of training, had done a year of training under Bill in Peoria, because he was from Peoria. And he asked me to come and look at the training that was going on in Bill's new program, which I did. Took a year of that training here and then decided I was going to specialize in premature baby care and looked around for sites that would train me in that and ended up in Louisville, Kentucky, where I did train in neonatal medicine. And following that, I knew that we had a historic premature baby program here, and talking to Bill, we decided to bring me back as the first fully trained neonatologist in Peoria and one of the first outside of the Chicago area. So that's how I got here.
Yeah, everybody who doesn't think the center of the universe is Peoria, Illinois is mistaken, because it's amazing how many intersects there are. Let's start talking a little bit about that premature, as it was known as the premature station, was established in 1942 in Peoria. It kind of got really put on the map. It was already on the map, but you have the film reel. In 1947, there was a movie made about it. And it was like a not full length, but it's about 18 minutes long, but it's the whole big bravado of it. Talk about the film that was made about the premature station and the innovative, cutting-edge care that was taking place in Peoria for babies that most people probably never thought had a chance of surviving.
In my early years of being the first director of this premature baby, they were called premature infant stations at the time. And in my first few years there, I was sitting at my desk one day when one of the religious Father Weischer came in and dropped two of these films on my desk. I had no idea what they were, but it turns out that in 1947, which was immediately after the end of the war, the Children's Bureau in Washington, D.C. had looked at how are we going to distribute our newly acquired tax funds nationally, and what kinds of things would public health departments in each state consider for using those resources for. And so they had sent a film crew to this Peoria Infant Station and developed this movie. And the movie, as you said, is about 18 to 20 minutes of what it was like to take care of premature babies at that time, which was coincidental with the development of the major advances in premature care, which was the premature incubator. And that was nothing more than a heated bed. And it got its start in Europe when a group of obstetricians and pediatricians had gone to a zoo and seen how incubators were used to raise chickens safely. And they then adapted those principles in care for premature babies. And that's what the sisters in their innovation had developed already, which was how to develop incubator care. And they were closely affiliating with a major premature baby station in Chicago developed by who was called the first premature baby doctor, Dr. Hess, and they had developed connections on how to collaborate with that kind of treatment. And that's why we think the Washington, D.C. leaders had picked Peoria, and they showed how to develop a program not just for Peoria, but for a 100-mile radius around Peoria, how to pick them up safely, bring them into the unit, and not have to develop that kind of care at every hospital in Illinois.
Which was impossible to do back at the time. It's also where the title of the book kind of comes through the window, because back then, even doctors weren't able to touch the babies because you thought that was the best way to care for these smallest babies, wasn't it? That's some of the care they were doing. There was minimal handling. You don't have the kangarooing you have now. A lot of things that have subsequently been learned were really different back in the 1940s when this film was made.
And even in the up into the 70s when I came, there were still three basic principles of the care of premature babies. One was the heat that was needed. The second was how to feed them, because they had not developed a sucking mechanism yet. So he had to learn how to feed them with tubes and eyedroppers. And the third thing was to protect them from infections. And that's why they were isolated, and families didn't even get to see their babies many times until they were big enough to be discharged out of these units.
It's amazing when you read some of the stories. And Monica, you did such a wonderful job, not only, you know, Dr. Miller's recollections and other people on the staff, just the stories from back in those days and the notes and the letters from new parents who, I just can't even imagine what it was like. How challenging and heart-wrenching was that as you were going through, gathering all of this information?
It was such an amazing journey that was full of emotion. I mean, I took a risk by talking to families that lost their children. I talked to mothers from the 50s and 60s that their child was whisked away from them, and they had no idea. It was like they didn't even have a baby. And this is where every family had a different story. So, I mean, I talked to about 50 different families, and it was so hard to get it down, to that point, but to come across. But every baby was different. Every family and their challenges were different. And that's what was so wonderful about this, that saving lives of children that, were forgotten years earlier. And when you find little references to the sisters carrying around a premature baby back in the 20s, it's like they just thought that they would do this and just carry it around. And that's how they nurtured these infants. But then it was natural for them to set up an official station under the auspices of the state of Illinois.
Yeah, it was impressive. And so by the time you recruit Dr. Miller to get here, Dr. Albers, you've already been here a few years, and then he comes in. You could see the potential. Your mind, just as I'm reading your book, it's like it was running 100 miles an hour on different things going on. But you could see all the ways, bottom line, caring for patients regardless of what they need. And you know, you ultimately went into pediatric cardiology. So again, another area that the progression from where we were in the 60s, the blue babies who didn't survive, to now where it happens. Tell us a little bit about that and what that was like, and just some of those early days and the challenges you faced.
So during the 70s, then we started recruiting additional specialists in endocrinology and several other disciplines, and that gradually began to grow. And as that happened, we started to attract patient referrals that patients that might have previously had to go to Chicago or not gone anywhere came to us. I began doing pediatric cardiology, and that program grew. As I said, we recruited Dr. Miller, and his NICU started attracting more babies. But not only we were already getting the babies, but now they were starting to survive. And I'll always remember the first baby that Tim put on a ventilator. We had, prior to that time, we had not used ventilators. We would just bag the babies or give them oxygen or whatever. And when I was in training, I was taught, well, if you put a baby on a ventilator, you can just say goodbye because they never come off the ventilator. That was because we didn't have very good machines and they were designed to treat adults and the lungs blew out and so on. But Tim came back with his knowledge and knew what kind of machine to order. We ordered a fancy machine. It sounded like a threshing machine, thrashing, making noise. And within 6 months, the first baby came off the ventilator. That was a 2.5-pound baby. As you know, premature babies were dying of lung disease, immature lung disease at the time. And they started to survive. And that, of course, was a good thing for the community. It was a good thing for the hospital. And we started receiving patients for that their kind of care. I had time. I wasn't doing that much cardiology. And I was in the hospital, and I was teaching the residents. So I started to see sick patients who would come in. Dr. Hart in his office would say, hey, I'm going to send in a sick baby with meningitis. Will you take care of him? And so I started doing what now would be hospitalist care. But I was taking care of the sick referrals. We started getting more and more referrals. And so the department began to grow. It took quite a while. Over the next 10 years, we began to recruit specialists in most of the disciplines. That continued even into the 80s. It took quite a while to grow the department, which, by the way, now has 140 pediatricians and specialists in every discipline. So we've come a long way since then.
Yeah, it seems like when you read the book, there were a lot of things done with a gentleman's handshake back in the day that I think some government regulations get in the way of now that I'm not so sure you would have had such an easy go of. But it's interesting
You're
to
right.
see it was a need, it was a necessity, you learned from it, and you saved lives. And that's some of the innovative approach that didn't always make sense on paper, but you talked through it and you did it. Kind of like neonatology. You know, we talk about the standard of care now. There are some things that are just accepted. The kangarooing, the ventilators, the surfactant. Surfactant for development of babies' lungs is just a given now. But Dr. Miller, what stands out, some of those big things when you first got here, and maybe the first decade you were here, you walked into a neonatal intensive care unit that's far different from the private rooms that you have today, where parents can sleep in the space with their baby 24/7. What are some of the biggest memories for you standing out from that time?
Well, as you pointed out, babies started surviving, and they started surviving at very, very low birth weights.
Yeah, tiny, less than a pound.
Yeah, occasionally.
Yeah.
And so the technology that came along with me as a specialist was, I'm sure, responsible for most of that. But in addition to that, there were major advances in surgery, and we started admitting and taking care of non-premature babies who had initial surgical problems usually. And again, we were able to use a couple of the existing surgeons Dr. Bill Marshall, the major one, to start operating on these babies that we used to have to send to Chicago or St. Louis. And I want to go back a minute and tell you that the work that Monica did with interviewing all these patients and nurses was a major stimulus for me to get this book written. I knew of Monica's having already written a book for the sisters for their history, so that was the first place that I looked for. But she opened my eyes. The stories that you're talking about that she identified, I had no idea about. I was side by side with all these nurses and patients for 21 years, and she uncovered things that I had never heard were going on in the unit. And one of the specific things that she found was a book of the experiences of fathers, because all the interest in premature babies had been tied to their mothers. And I had never seen anything written about what were the fathers doing during all of this time when mothers, as I pointed out, couldn't even see their baby yet. But what was happening with the fathers, and she found a whole section that's identified in the book.
It's very poignant.
About what they were doing.
So you bring up another good point. You two were fabulous doctors and did what you did very well. The care teams that surrounded you were phenomenal as well. It takes a village. It took a village then, didn't it, in both of your worlds? Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, from my point of view, I used to say that 90% of the care of premature babies was their nurses, not their doctors. We would make rounds usually in the morning and then in the late afternoon, and we'd make decisions about what ventilator to use or what drug to give. But all the rest of the care was given by these nurses, and that's one of the reasons I wanted the book written. I wanted to know what was going on in the minds of these 90% caregivers, and she found it. She found it in spades in my mind. Her book is, her stories are wonderful examples of what's going on in the care of these infants 24 hours a day.
Well, I think that it's important to remember that the cliche, children are not just little adults. And so when I first came and started talking about developing a pediatric medical center, the attitude of the general staff and the nursing staff was, well, yeah, that's fine. But for example, we had only one social worker for the whole hospital. We did not have adequate facilities for parents to stay with their children. There was no such thing as a play lady, somebody to play with the kids while they were in the hospital. The dietary department was totally devoted to adults, and we would serve two-year-olds scrambled eggs and bacon for breakfast. So there was a lot of changes of thinking that had to go on. And that culminated with the development of the so-called hospital within a hospital, the Children's Hospital, which actually one of my colleagues, Dr. Steve Bash, was here, and he looked around and he said, you know, we have all the resources to have a true children's hospital. Why don't we call ourselves a children's hospital? This was a movement that was going on in the 80s, the so-called hospital within a hospital, a general hospital, taking the pediatric unit that was already there and adding to it the necessary support staff and the team approach to provide the best care for children in all respects, both social, economical, and so forth. I was actually a little skeptical because I thought, well, you know, we doctors, we're doing a fine job here, and these nurses are good. But we didn't have as many resources for families, and we didn't have anything like palliative care and so on. So when we formed the Children's Hospital, it did two things. First of all, it gave a specific administrator. The president of the Children's Hospital was a representative of hospital administration, and I had never had that. I had had no relationship to administration. I had to go through some other channel to get what I wanted to be done. This person represented the Department of Pediatrics medically as well as to administration. But the biggest thing it did was to change the attitude of the people that were working the children. I heard all the time, nurses, radiology technicians, lab technicians, we're a children's hospital now. We have to do better. We have to do this better. And I think it changed the attitude of the individuals that were managing these children. This happened over a period of time. I think some of the medical staff, non-pediatricians, kind of were a little bit put off by that. But I think everybody bought into it once they saw how it was developing and how we were able to improve the outcomes as well as the patient satisfaction.
So all of that groundwork that was laid starting in the 60s, let's be honest. So it started in the 60s.
Yes, it did.
It now is the OSF Healthcare Children's Hospital of Illinois in Peoria, Illinois. Could you ever have envisioned it would be what it is today when
it
started?
Not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all. I would have been happy if we had 25 docs and if we were graduating 4 residents a year and that they were doing well and passing their boards. That was kind of my goal. We're graduating 12 residents a year, and we have 140 physicians and many, many other providers in terms of nurse practitioners, and a new building, which was the sore point for many years. Our physical facilities were way behind what we were trying to do, and it took a while, but we do have a
2010
first-class facility that qualifies as a true children's hospital now.
And in 2010, I can still remember being there when we had to move from the old NICU. That was a ward-like setting where the neonates were located, and you went into the new facility. And what it took to transport all of those teams through the hallways into the new facility, I'm sure Dr. Miller, well, I know, because Dr. Miller walked side by side with those patients and made sure they got settled in. And I'll ask both of you, do you have a patient that stands out in your minds? I realize you practiced a really long time, and there's so many stories over the course of the years, but everybody always has that person that sticks out. Is there somebody or someone that stands out that you remember from all those years that kind of sums up why you did what you did and made that difference?
Well, it's easy for me. That's the Helms quintuplets, because there were 5 of them born. We had teams for each of those 5. And they are approaching, by the way, their 31st birthday.
No, 37th.
Well,
they just turned 37. Yes.
30 something.
And, all adults, all doing well. Yeah.
And they are doing well. And she describes, because she has a big section in there of what that family went through. And that's another reason for this book, is to identify what's on the other side of the medical picture that we went through. But she has a great description of what that family went through.
Yeah, even as much as them, honestly, I was in tears. The Duffy quintuplets, there are 4 surviving of the Duffy quintuplets who were born about, I don't know, 10. Well, there's going to be 30. They're celebrating their 30th. They'll be 30 this year. So they were a few years behind the Helms quints. And as I was just reading, Bridget and Mark's recollection of that time, surfactant was a thing by that point and everything. Sure. It's still... I'll ask you, Monica, the stories, there were so many of them. Does one jump out at you as you were gathering all the information?
Well, with the Helms, I knew them along the way because I worked in newspaper at the time. With the Duppies, I interviewed them via Zoom. And the 3 of us hardly had a dry eye. Mark was very, and I'm not saying this, to embarrass him, but he was so emotional because he nearly lost Bridget. They make it a point of telling those kids, you're one of, you're still a quintuplet, and they have a special place, for their daughter there, and these kids, grew up. But I think of all the lives that have happened because of what these gentlemen and these nurses, and that was what attracted me. He says, I want this book to be about the nurses. Okay. And those nurses told me stories that I cried with some of them, and you can't help. You've got to look at the human side of this. That's the whole story of life, the human side of it, too.
Yeah, and it's very well captured. Yeah, absolutely. So before we finish up, I do want to mention, Through the Window is available for purchase at the gift shops at St. Francis Medical Center and Children's Hospital of Illinois. We will put in the line notes, because Dr. Alber's book is out of print, because he didn't think anybody would want to read this book. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm like, this book is great, and seeing the photos. So we will put in the line notes where people can get a copy of Dr. Alber's book, Growing Pediatricians in a Cornfield. Before I let all of you go, I want to ask for one, you know, last memory or something you want to share about gathering and telling of these stories and the innovative history of the sisters and everybody else, who, because everybody, you'll hear them say, well, why Peoria? You captured it very well. Part of it is location, and it's still to this day, it draws through the Midwest. But I want to know what you want people to recognize from this journey. So I'll start with you, Monica. What about this journey do you want people to remember?
I think that we need to remind ourselves of the sisters. We're coming into an era where there are not as many. And they are the ones who took the risk, who did things that may have just seen, why are you doing this? But it was out of this deep compassion and this desire to heal and help families and see these babies, you know, live and have a quality of life. And that's what I think, that's part of what this goes back full circle to, that we need to remind ourselves what it is all about.
And I just want to reemphasize, the sisters took all kinds of risks, and they developed this innovation of building a unit that not only cared for premature babies, but for other sick newborns. And they developed it for an entire region of central Illinois, not just for Peoria, but they had to develop all of the programs that allowed those patients to be transferred in here safely and then sent back to their communities with educating the physicians on how to take care of them.
Dr. Albers?
Well, I certainly agree with that. I would just like to add that in addition to the innovation and to the foresight of the sisters, I think, first of all, the state of Illinois had confidence in placing a medical school in a community hospital where there were volunteer physicians and teachers and community hospitals. They had no relationship to the university per se. And secondly, to the students and residents who in their early years bought into that. They were taking a chance. They were not coming to a traditional center. They were coming to a center that was in the process of developing and learning themselves how to do it.
In the middle of a cornfield.
That's the
name of the book.
That's the name of the book. And Tim was a physician who did a residency here. And there were a number of general pediatricians in the 70s who came, went through our program, and then stayed as the bulwark of the pediatric community as we moved on. It took there was some innovative thinking involved in that as well. This probably has not happened in any other communities the size of Peoria.
Yeah, and you think about what, you know, in the past, whatever, 50-some years, where you went from to where it is now. I don't know that you will have that lightning speed of progression in the next 50 years. There was a lot that took place in the last 50 years. There's still stuff going on now, but I feel like there were big leaps and bounds of learning and developing and innovating that took place. Dr. Bill Albers, Dr. Tim Miller, Monica Vestwheeler, thank you so much. We could probably sit here for the next hour and talk about stories, but for now, we will wrap it up and say thank you for being part of Health Accelerated, brought to you by OSF Healthcare.
Thank you for having us here.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of Health Accelerated, brought to you by OSF Healthcare. Listen and subscribe on your favorite podcast app. You can also find links to any of our episodes at osfinnovation.org/healthaccelerated.